T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Want to put your baseball skills to the test? Then get ready to show your stuff with MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run. The official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Sign up for free for a chance to play your way to the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 World Series. Visit pitchhitrun.com today.
So, as a meteorologist, as a scientist, I acknowledge and respect science, and I have a faith in something more. The two are not mutually exclusive. I think you can have an appreciation for the scientific method. It's not perfect. Nothing on this planet is. But you can also have a faith in something more. And I'm not pushing Christianity. I got a letter from a listener who said, Paul, quit pushing your faith on me. And I go, well, I'm not going to tell you what to believe. You will decide what you want to believe, what you don't want to believe. It's a part of me. Jordana talks a lot about her faith, her Judaism. And I talk about my faith. It's a part of me. And I'm not ashamed to talk about what I believe and why. And I'm lucky to be going to Westwood Community Church in Chanhassen. Pastor Joel Johnson has been there a long time, and it's been a crazy year and a half. And he's been on frequently, I think, providing some perspective and some suggestions and some hope for all of us who are looking for hope. And he joins us today. Hey, Joel.
Hi, Paul. It's good to be back with you again, and I appreciate the integration of faith to whole life that you bring and the freedom for everybody to find that in their own journey as well. But yeah, I got some great hope myself last June through a friend, Ed Stetzer. He's a fairly well-known guy who heads up the Billy Graham Center in Wheaton, Illinois, but also is a guy who gives commentary in both the secular and the sacred spheres of influence about culture and its impact. And I had the opportunity connect with him in June, and he said something that really gave some perspective and helped me settle a little, have a compass to move forward, and I was grateful for that. But he spoke about the fact that we're going through a cultural convulsion and referred to a sociologist who indicated that America goes through one every 60 years, and the last one was in 1968. And Paul, you were around enough to remember, at least as a little boy, some of what was happening then, Vietnam War, riots on the streets, yep. There was political mayhem, RFK was assassinated, Martin Luther King Jr. assassinated, and there was also a pandemic called the Hong Kong flu. Do you remember that?
I do, yeah.
What was interesting then is we didn't do any masking related to that. We had Woodstock instead, but we've come a long way in terms of understanding how we want to apply health and seeking the benefit of others in a time of a pandemic like this. But what I appreciated is that he spoke about how that cultural convulsion, and he outlined other ones previous to that, but that one really stood out to me. I was a young boy myself during that time, not enough to be tuned into the weight and significance of it. But a couple of things that stood out that gave me some encouragement, I guess, some help and hope in my own journey of trying to seek to lead in these turbulent times. And one was that it takes about 2 to 4 years to come through a cultural convulsion. In other words, it was like, Joel, remove the wishful thinking that by this fall or Christmas, all will be well. It's going to take some time, get accustomed to hard and get accustomed to and acclimating to more unhappiness that people have around us. But then also the upside of that, he said, was to expect good to come from it. And I think we all need that kind of hope. After 1968, after a few years of that cultural convulsion, came a lot of innovation, and we're hopeful for the same. And of course, I speak as a pastor of the church, so we're greatly impacted by what's taking place. And I have a hope that there's a lot of good to follow this, and And we're seeking to be about that as well. In fact, we have a couple of ways we're moving forward. One is to try to solidify oneness in the greater Twin City area, as well as our own faith community. And it's one of the things that's happened over the last year that in 41 years I've been in ministry, I've never seen, but we're linking arms with the church all across the Twin Cities and establishing the presence. I believe I have a very high view of the church. I believe the church, when it's working right, is wonderful. We just aren't always working right. I have one of my axioms around here is if we could only get the love thing right, there's no end to what we could be and do for God's honor and the benefit of humanity. We just don't always get the love thing right, but we're seeking to do that. And we're linking arms with black leaders of churches around the Twin Cities and other leaders as well. And we're coming together in a way we've never come together. And it's very, very exciting. You might be familiar with the 21 Days of Peace. I know you guys have given a lot of attention to that, but it hit the Washington Post last week in terms of the impact of interrupting violence in Minneapolis one lawn chair at a time. That was born out of the church. So there's just a lot of good that's happening, Paul, in the midst of the heart, and we're trying to lean into it.
Well, Joel, that's encouraging to hear. And so many people are living lives of perpetual stress and anxiety. And we had a depression problem before the pandemic hit, and it just seems like, as you said, with these convulsions, racial justice and then the pandemic, it's brought some of the rot, for lack of a better word, to the surface for all to see. How do you deal with that at Westwood? What do you tell people who come up and say, look, I have faith, but I'm just having a real problem getting through this time. Maybe I'm, you know, because of masking and vaccines, I'm separated from people I love, family members, friends. I mean, it really has caused such division the past 18 months. What do you tell people?
Yeah, there's just such a heightened sense of agitation and concern for the well-being of people emotionally, mentally, physically. And I would say in the last year, we have exponentially increased counsel to families that have been divided over this. And the unfortunate piece is it's become a little bit of a boo cheer session. Our ability to dialogue, to think together, has been minimized when we really need to find ways to agree to disagree. And it's really challenging. The walls are high around people's convictions. And there's a place we want to have deep convictions, but we want to enter a place of healthier dialogue together. So it's trying to encourage people to find bridges with families and keeping their families together as a priority. Of course, we come from a faith perspective that believes that God is bigger than all of these things. So to the end that we could get right in our relationship with God, that brings an internal healing, but also a healing with friends and family, but also into our communities. And that's what we're hopeful that will take place. But you're right. It's a little bit like this whole scenario. It's like grief over what we're going through, the loss, because we've seen such a disruption in our ability to connect with each other. And we're trying to find new ways to connect in healthier and whole ways. But because of our deep convictions, it's difficult to enter into that. It's a little bit like a car crash. You get hit hard. Grief is that way for us. We get hit hard, and it's concussive, and it's a time of really being ambushed by feelings and thoughts that perhaps we've never had before. So we try to get people to put words to their feelings, try to get the convictions and the opinions out in a way that allow us to speak into it with each other rather than divide around it. That's our greatest challenge. And I think the election last fall didn't help us a lot. A lot of political divide that fueled all the already existing tensions that we had in our communities, but as well in the pandemic and how we're trying to interface with that. But, you know, I think we're just trying to attend to people and say we understand and we validate what they're feeling and thinking, but say there's a better way. There's a better way for us to manage these things as well as a better way for us to be together in these things, too. I always say that anxiety is a heightened sense of concern and a diminished sense of control. And we're experiencing both. And if we could bring that heightened sense of concern and close that gap with that diminished sense of control that we have. And I think God and I think faith actually helps us do that. It gives us a power greater than ourselves are able to bring to the table. And we can gain, I think, a land strip of better understanding and hopeful mutual understanding with each other. It's what we're seeking to do, but I'll say it's hard. It's really hard.
Joel, last question, and these are not easy questions, and forgive me, I don't want to ambush you, but Jesus was pretty unequivocal when he said, love the Lord your God with your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind, and with all your strength. And then the second commandment, love your neighbor as yourself. Yeah. There is no commandment greater than these. That's Mark 12, 29, 31. Why do we have such a tough time loving our neighbors? People maybe who don't think like us or look like us or vote like us. Are we hardwired to be that way?
I think our natural inclination is towards self, absolutely. It's interesting to me that you would raise the great commandment of loving God and loving your neighbor as yourself, because that is the fuel to getting the love thing right. And it takes a discipline to be able to see people the way God sees people, because he sees them from the inside. We see them from the outside. So we're so quick to judgment on what we see from the outside. But it requires that we listen well, that we suspend our convictions, not get rid of our convictions, just loosen our grip so we can understand why people think things differently than ourselves. That allows us to enter into some domain of respect where we can voice in ways that bring greater civility, greater honor, and hopefully greater journey together in the process of just trying to connect with where people are. But it is. I think that's where we need the reminder from the Lord to that end. We want to get the love thing right. We just don't naturally get the love thing right. It takes the discipline of heart and mind, and I think the help of God to be able to move into that domain. But when you do, it's really a beautiful thing. When you get to see people the way God sees people, it's a real gift. When you treat people the way you want to be treated, that golden rule, it's extraordinary. And when you love people the way God loves you, and oh, how God loves you, he truly does, that changes the worldview that we have. And so we become much more welcoming to the stranger, to those who have differing views and opinions than we might have. And there's joy in that, to be with people of diverse thought and backgrounds, and to be together as God's children and God's people. It's a gift, but it's a discipline, and you have to choose to move in that direction. As happiness is a choice, so is celebrating the reality of people and their differing viewpoints as well.
Well said. Hey, Joel, last question. I promise this will really be the last question.
Okay.
I think I've said that the last couple of questions. I don't want to let you go. I need the message of hope and optimism. I mean, there are days where I wake up, I'm afraid to look at my phone. I'm afraid to turn on the radio. Like, what now, Lord? You know, what's next? How are things going at Westwood? And what do you hear from other pastors, ministers, priests, imams? just curious what you're hearing. And are things kind of back to some semblance of normal yet?
No. Some semblance of normal, certainly they are. But nowhere where they were pre-pandemic by any means. And we, like other churches, and really anyone who's leading an organization, we're all navigating similar tension points in different kinds of ways. But, you know, at Westwood, we're probably 60% back in terms of people being present at our different campuses. But, you know, online has become the primary and largest congregation in our journey. We just know that online experiences will be our norm moving forward. We're seeking to celebrate that as we continue to invite people back in. But, you know, across the country, in the world of the church world, at least, there's what's called the resorting of the evangelical church because of the tensions. And we're in the middle of that. So there are a lot of strong convictions on how to approach these things in the world in which we live, whether it's the cultural crisis that we're in, the race tensions that we are seeing, the mask or no mask, social distance or no social distance, these things that so quickly divide are creating some divisions. And yet again, I just believe God works in spite of who we are, and we'll continue to lean forward, strain toward what lies ahead, as we're told, with the confidence that God is bigger than these things. And there's not only going to be healing, but there's going to be fruit. And that's what keeps me going every day. But certainly, churches are impacted. We're impacted along with churches in the Twin Cities, but all across our country we are. This cultural convulsion is real. And it's a time for us to look in the mirror as a society and as a people, and for us as churches to say, who are we and what are we most about and who do we belong to and how do we bring the goodness of God into the world that he's called us to bring? And I think we'll find new creative ways to do that. So I'm hopeful for the future, but we have to lean into the heart and not get in the fetal position and just wait for it to pass by.
I appreciate your sentiments, your reflection. Joel Johnson, senior pastor, Westwood Community Church in amazing Chanhassen. Thank you so much, Joel. Thanks for joining us on CCO. Wish you
Thanks,
and yours
Paul,
the best.
Be well.
Thank you.
All right. Bye now.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. T-Mobile.com.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Want to put your baseball skills to the test? Then get ready to show your stuff with MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run. The official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Sign up for free for a chance to play your way to the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 World Series. Visit pitchhitrun.com today.